The founders forgot that we had medical liberty.
We seem to be losing by taking the side of the middle. And we seem to constantly be losing.
I think Trump has made some kind of arrangements with Russia.
This person has made the allegations that they were a man.
If there's content that's borderline, that's content that we basically will not.
There is no second best. There is no second best crypto asset.
Let's talk about science.
I respect you and I have a great deal of appreciation to you, JF, because in a time when everybody was attacking me, when Sargon doxed me and smeared me, you were the only one who gave me a platform, and you were very kind in helping me put the truth out there.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Jeff G Tonight. We'll have a short regular show tonight as we are headed toward our private Jeff G Tonight hangout of the month. We'll see what we discuss in the private hangout. End of the line, Joel. I got 99 conjectures, but a gold back ain't one. A new song that he is writing. I think that you've been inspired by my recent life. If you are writing this song, how are you doing, people of the regular chat? We have a Wash WSJ, Wall Street Journal, story on Epstein is out. Jeffrey Epstein's friends send him body letters for a 50th birthday album. One was from Donald Trump. The letter-bound book was compiled by Ghislaine Maxwell. The president says the letter is a fake thing. Rich people exchanging letters and books. Not super important. Not very revealing of engagement in any sort of criminality. So just indicative of who was the social network of Jeffrey Epstein. We have this is memeing a lot. So a CEO with his HR woman get caught in some sort of love embrace because they end up on the front TV. But he was married to another woman, apparently.
Yeah. Oh, look at these two. All right, come on. You're okay? Oh, what? Either they're having an affair or they're just very shy. I'm not quite sure. Yeah. Oh, look at these two. All right, come on. You're okay? Oh, what? Either they're having an affair or they're just very shy.
Bro, how pathetic is that? Workplace relationship at this age, in betrayal of your wife. It's so pathetic, this boomer idea that you can continue sex at 50, 60, like you're young and you're not reproductive, and all that it will do is really break family links. It's really per hedonism, relationship hedonism.
Yeah. Oh, look at these two.
This woman is not reproductive.
Yeah. Oh.
This is an old woman. Never have a romance with an old woman. Blimpy supervisor says we need many more spotlights like that. Yeah, I mean, it's good that they spotlighted it. So now people are looking for. Initially, people thought maybe it's a breach of the internal policy of the company because it's a boss with an employee. There's many companies who have these ridiculous policies at this point where you can't have romantic relationships. But in this case, I think the guy had a wife. So people are now finding his wife on Facebook to go warn her that... that he is being disloyal. Reclaim Man says they have to oil up the machinery at that age. I mean, it's pointless. Sex at that age is absolutely pointless. So don't do it. JB Politics says disorder erupts in Epping following the sexual assault of a young girl by an illegal migrant.
Get it! Fuck it up! Hello, guys. This is a fucking epic live. What are you doing? What are you telling me?
You now have whites uprising because the political class in Europe has been importing these migrants, putting them in hotels, literally giving them places to live while the local population has to work their ass off to make a living, to have a place to live. They give these hotel rooms for free. And they just you're just maintaining a bunch of dangers, a bunch of risks, a bunch of liabilities within your society. And now we find that around the hotel where the migrants are being not held, they're being let to live there, they're being paid for, around these hotels, now you have young girls being sexually harassed and abused. And this feminist believes that it's okay. We have to endure the rape because the people who are objected to these rapes are not truly for women. They are against migrants.
Let's talk about how the far right weaponized women's sexual trauma as a way to push far right, white supremacist and racist views. In the past few days, a young girl was assaulted by a man, and the man was an immigrant. Of course, people were angry about this. People were raging and there was a protest outside the hotel that he was living at. You'd think, oh, okay, people are protesting in support of women, speaking up against rape and sexual assault and speaking about violence against women. Finally, the right have realised how big of an issue this is. But surprise, surprise, they haven't. This was just another excuse to push anti-immigration and racist views.
So the feminist left is developing an exception. Rape is bad except when it's done by migrants, in which case you have to be careful because you might be anti-migrant.
Here has emerged online of an immigrant man walking back to the hotel during the protests with blood pouring out of his face. And while he was walking back, a woman from the protesters screamed, "This is what happens to illegal immigrants." This post perfectly proves the fact that these people don't care about women. They don't actually care about women.
The problem is the level of rape by migrants in Europe is something like 50x for the worst classes of migrants, like Algerians. 50x the time you would expect a rapist to be Algerian rather than white. That is levels at which there is basically a confounding happening. Basically, most rapes are at this point committed by non-whites, and the problem is the same. Immigration, rape, it becomes the same issue. It's one entertains the other. And so at this point, if you're going to only complain about rapes coming from whites, you're complaining about a quasi-inexistent problem. Tryhard says we need a eugenics program for far-left white women. Good luck. Good luck. It is very hard to do female eugenics. Very hard, very hard. Because a female down the line, no matter what she spouts, no matter if she's insane, if she has a valid uterus, there is still evolutionary value to her. It's special because men have been subjected to such eugenic pressure. Like we kill each other. We killed each other at amazing rates, such that even a degree of impoliteness can get you killed in the past and to a certain extent in our society, depending on where you're hanging out. So there has been much more eugenics on men than there has been for women, because women, unfortunately, evolutionarily, are always recyclable. They are always valid as long as they have the functional uterus. Talking about autism today, someone was asking me, Jeff, what is your perspective on Sapolsky's speech on autism? Let's listen to it.
Functionally, in someone with autism, there is a lack of integration of a whole bunch of these different functions there. And that's what happens when you have maybe a mutation or maybe some epigenetic something or other prenatally that changes the shape of the power law distribution. Interesting. There's a gender difference in the power law distribution of wiring in the cortex, which is, in the typical female brain, if this is the power law distribution, and in the male brain, it's a little steeper. Male brains are more modular in their wiring. What's the biggest part of the brain? Okay, we're running out of space here. There it is. There's the brain in cross-section. And you've got cortex here and cortex there. And famously, here's all the cell bodies. And when projections are going from one hemisphere to the other, it goes across this huge bundle of axons called the corpus callosum. The corpus callosum is thicker in women than in men, on the average. It is thicker in females than in males because the power law pattern is such that there are more long-distance connections in female networks, and thus it's a thicker corpus callosum. The same thing is playing out with connections like this and connections, but this is the big honker one. You get a thinner corpus callosum in men. You get an even thinner corpus callosum in people with autism. Again, that hypermale notion there of Baron Cohen's. What you have here is perfectly normal number of neurons, probably even perfectly normal number of connections between the neurons, but they're more local, they're more isolated in the autistic cortex. There's less integration of function. It's more isolated islands of function there.
Yeah, I don't think that we understand autism to the point of networking, but I think it's a good start. And yes, it's what we know. These things we know, and he's noted the fact that the autism brain is basically a super male brain. It's just a more male brain. More male-like brain than most males, and I believe that actually there was an evolutionary history to this, and I believe that the autism brain was the original male brain, and that just the modern cucks, basically the modern betas, are simply not wired to survive on their own, and they have become feminized in the process. I believe that ancestrally, the Y chromosome was giving you autism, which is the right way to see the world and the right way to process information. But as the evolutionary pressure relaxed for decisiveness, capacity to categorize the environment, modular thinking of I'm not going to let the social world change my view of the truth, that kind of features was needed in the past, and slightly as societies became more connected, became less and less relevant, because you basically, in our society, you can be dependent on everyone else, and so you don't really need a brain. In fact, you literally don't need a brain in our society. They will keep you alive in some form if you have a very, very dysfunctional brain or if you're in coma. So yeah, I believe that what Sapolsky is saying here is brilliant and true. But in the end, we just don't understand. Is this change of neural pattern, is this different distribution of interconnectivity, is this causing the features of autism that we know of? It's very hard to say. And in the end, in modern times, I don't even believe in the label autism. And there's now a study that came out that is totally in line with what I've been saying for 15 years discovering basically that what the people we've been binning in the category autism, really, they have four distinct genetic patterns to them, and it's impossible that these four distinct genetic patterns lead to one thing. It's leading to a bunch of things that we're bunching together into the category autism. As I said in my tweet, autism, as it is diagnosed these days, is not a thing. It's a bunch of things that range from socially weird mathematical genius to this black guy needs to be put on welfare. That is how autism is being used in modern times. We have these very alarming stories, like, is it in Minneapolis where they diagnosed 30% of the non-white population as autistic because it gives them some Gibbs? I mean, it is extremely worrying because it's an extension of a diagnostic process just because there's money associated to it. And it all stems from the fact that first, Obamacare came in and declared autism is the special category. And if you can get a diagnosis of autism, we're going to give you a reimbursement for all the diagnostic. So you had a whole health profession explosion around autism, because once you were able to diagnose a child with autism, you could charge $8,000 instantly just for the beginning route of testing. And then perhaps down the line, tens of thousands of dollars in attempts at treatment or follow-up. So it is big business. And it all started with like legal declarations that, oh yeah, this will have to be included in the insurance reimbursement. And from there, it grew and it grew. And at this point, you have even social welfare benefits that are associated to the diagnosis. People were calling this on Twitter today, autism bucks. They said, can I get autism bucks, JF, if you send me a letter? I was not aware, but apparently there's a term for it. Mr. Wisco says, the symptoms of autism align with those of high IQ as well. Well, as we will see in these four categories, they have taken a bunch of people who were probably retarded, mentally retarded. They've labeled them autism. So now it's autism with developmental delay. And then you have the other types of autism that are not at all suffering from any sort of developmental delays or retardation. So here they have made the study by collecting people that have been diagnosed with autism, classifying their genetic patterns. So do they have this gene associated with autism? Do they have this other gene? And it led them to four clusters. I don't like the way they titled the clusters, because it is my view that within one of these clusters, perhaps the orange or perhaps the green one, is actually what I would call normal intelligent guy autism. And I don't know exactly if it's the orange one or the green one, but I would say certainly in there is hiding the autism isn't a disorder ID. So they have compared these people to non-autistic siblings. So we have here a control group that is genetically similar from not too far from the group at play, but they are the control group that happen not to have been diagnosed with autism. I do have some questions about this method, because one of the problems is people also get tired of the diagnosis of autism. So they get their first child diagnosed and they're hyper-medicalized when it's their first child. But then they're like, oh, well, you know, it's just normal stuff. And did we really gain anything from this diagnosis? No. So they let it go sometimes on the second child. So I'm not sure that these non-autistic siblings are all non-autistic. So I'm not sure they are valid truly in principle as a control group. You have here very different features. So if you look at, for example, the green ones, they call it social and or behavioral. So that's a group that looks like they are scoring extremely well on anxiety, attention deficit. It's like they don't have these other things. They don't have these other things that are generally associated with the whole group that we bunch into autism. So that's why they are called social and behavioral. They look pretty happy. They do have some amount of restricted behavior and limited social communication. So that's why they get referred to as social and behavioral. But they have absolutely no developmental delay. And when you look at their age of first words used, they're pretty much gathering around the control group. So they speak early. They speak early in life. They walk early in life. In fact, arguably, maybe a little lower than the control group. Some of them are developing even earlier walking than the control group. And it's really when you score social stuff. So they have a form of pure autism. But then you have other groups like ASD with DD, developmental delay in blue here. They have a positive relationship with developmental delay. They don't so much differ on restricted behavior and social communication. So they are exactly at the average line. The line where this phenotype is not particularly observed in the negative or positive direction. So they basically don't even have the feature of pure autism, of social limitations. But they do have negative disruptive behavior, anxiety, self-injury, and developmental delay. So, and you look at, they develop at rates that are extremely broader. Some of them taking twice the amount of time to get to their first words. Some of them taking close to twice the amount of time getting to their first walking. So that is the blue group, and this is what I would call just retard autism. It's cases where doctors don't want to say retarded, they don't want to say developmental delay, and so they end up using autism. It fits, it flags the child for having some special need, but the reality is these children are not as intelligent, they don't develop, and it's not really their social limitations are almost secondary to their main diagnosis, which is that they're retarded and they truly need support for learning stuff that normal people would learn easier. We have links with other diagnosis, educational attainment. It's very hard to see in this bunching whether, you know, here the orange group seems to be equally performant to the control group. So are they the ones that are more intelligent? Interestingly, the green group seems to have more ADHD diagnosis and more major depression disorder diagnosis. Now, in modern times, young people ending up in these diagnostic boxes, I don't know what that means, because depression at this point is extremely abused in terms of diagnosis. You can end up with a major depression disorder without doing much, almost accidentally, if your doctor just checks the box and wants to give you some wants to give you some antidepressants. So I'd be careful with these correlations. But what I'm most interested in, and unfortunately the article does not give the answer, and it could give the answer because they have racial diversity in this article. I'm looking for the graph that shows it. See, they have a lot of white in orange. They have a lot of mixed in blue. They have a couple of Asians in their study. So that's interesting. Very few Asians in the study. Are they harder to find? Do they not get the autism diagnosis? I don't know. But African Americans, there is an interesting amount of African Americans in the study in green here. But I'd like to see the relationship. It's not enough to tell me, oh yeah, there were black people in our studies. I would like to see, is there a relation between one of the subtypes of autism? Because my theory is that these subtypes of autism are the result of diagnostic self-deception. That across the years, the profession has changed and the DSM definitions have changed to basically hide the fact that we had a per definition of autism, and we've extended it to all sorts of broad things that we don't quite understand, and we're basically at this point using it as a flag to say something bizarre with this guy, not sure what it is, maybe give him money, maybe his mother has pressured me to say he was autistic because he wants some social welfare. It's very important that we find, is there racial differences in the categorization of the four categories of autism? Because if my theory is true, basically the blue don't even belong in what we would call autism, and perhaps other categories don't belong. I mean, when you look at the difference between the red and the orange, how can you have a diagnostic category in which the red differs that much from orange? That looks to me like two different types of behavior. It looks to me like two different diagnoses would be deserved for this, for what they call broadly affected and moderate challenges. So if we want to explore the path of diagnostic self-deception, I'd be extremely curious as to, is it possible that the way we treat communities, the way we treat black people in the medical clinic, differs so much by the way we treat white people that you end up directing people in the bin autism, but you end up doing it at different rates across these four dimensions. So let's say you're faced with a black child that is retarded. You don't want to create racial offense. The doctor feels bad. There's the black mother there, and he's like, I don't want to tell her that her child is retarded. Is it possible that we end up in the autism category ends up getting solved because of human self-deception, because of fear, because of not wanting to face reality? That would be my hypothesis. Of course, will you ever get a test for this hypothesis? It is so it is so controversial. It's hard to believe that they would actually give us the data to answer that question. But you have it. You have racial diversity in your study. You could ask, is there a racial preferential distribution? And Nicholas Petrus says, sounds very reasonable. Yeah, my hypothesis tend to be very reasonable. I'm not a crazy guy. But yeah, I mean, is the American system ready for this, for giving up the broadness of the autism? Well, you're going to have to do it because the science is catching up. This is the lesson today about this study. Science catches up, and at some point you can bin everyone in a category. Some scientist is going to start picking up this category, and see, you have different things going on here. Now, of course, the study looks at it very from within system view. They're not saying we have to rename autism into four different things. They're saying there's four different genetic pattern of autism. But I'm saying it. I'm saying rename autism. I'm saying abandon this concept that autism is so broad that it's a continuum and that there's all sorts of ways to be autistic. No, you've discovered, you have it right in your face here. The genetic data is telling you it's four different things. Jan Rushdie says, tonight's episode of the New Inquisition is pretty edgy. Yeah, we talked in French today with Jan Rushdie. We talked about the rapes that must occur. We talked about the difficult reality of the morally neutral rapes. Pretty edgy for YouTube, the morally neutral rapes. Those particular... It's not a lot of rape. But there's those particular rapes that you're like, I'm not touching this. I am an observer of the rape. I remain objective. I have no dog in this fight. The rape will occur. Unconventional wisdom says, I don't know how to tell you this, but your child is autistic. Yes, that's exactly what's happening. And how many times do we have this? Like, and we end up soiling a whole diagnostic category. If anything, genuinely autistic people, the kind that would have been diagnosed by Asperger syndrome back in the days, they are the ones who don't get the right services, because now you have all of your research base is now made on a bunch of people who are unlike you. So now you have developmental courses and social cueing strategies being used by experts and applied to the child. And that may help the black retarded child. It may not help you, you know? And so we end up having people misdirected toward the wrong solutions for their lives. Putative Pathogen says, my daughter is autistic. I never had an ultrasound. Oh yeah, there's the... Okay, Sense of Progress was mentioning the exponential rise in retard autism circa 1980 to present directly correlates with ultrasound scans in pregnancy. Yeah, there is this open question in the pregnancy, in the obstetrics domain. Is it wise what we're doing right now, which is to give every pregnant female an ultrasound, knowing that the ultrasound works by shooting waves of physical energy toward the baby? That's the reason we can see the baby. Now, they will tell you, well, it's small waves. It's we're not giving much exposure. But you also know, if you're a technician in this domain, you also know that this machine, turn it up 2x, 3x, 4x, and it could kill the baby. You could literally kill the baby with just sound waves that are strong enough. You could literally make it fully handicapped for his whole life. And so we have the question of the continuum here. There's nothing that tells us we're not slowly causing medical problems in the population with these ultrasounds, that we would have no way to detect it if every ultrasound, let's say every million ultrasound tests you give creates 5 handicapped babies. We don't know. Putative Pathogen says, I think vaxes were a trigger and antibiotics exacerbated the condition. Not saying that ultrasounds are good or benign. Yeah, I mean, who knows? In the bunch of things that we throw at children, These days, we have created an uncontrollable situation. Impossible to do proper science on, do we hurt children with ultrasounds? Do we hurt them with the vaxes? I'll tell you what, my philosophy is to give up all that modernity has to offer and say, you know what, nature is the thing to trust here. And it's been leading me to very healthy children. I have nothing to complain about my children. And no, they haven't gone through all of these steps that modernity basically implies an obligation for. They coach young females to accept all of these things. But then you have all these people who have been hurt, like people saying, hey, I have the impression that my child was made severely handicapped by this vax, or by this, when they pull a syringe from the amniotic sac, and some pregnancies are lost where the child is killed by a bad amniotic syringe or something like this. And you're like, is this all accounted for? When your doctor tells you there is evidence that this injection is good, what degree of evidence are we talking about? You probably did. You took that injection. You gave it to 600 children. You took 600 children. You didn't give them the injection. You followed them for 3 months. You don't really care down the line what happens. You don't know the long-term consequences. And then you started giving that injection to millions of children. And then you started comparing these millions of children with 5 retarded farmer children. It's impossible to do proper controls in the modern world. So my philosophy is kind of radical, but my philosophy is quite simple. I know what nature can give. Nature gives me the insurance of natural selection, the insurance that every single problem has been iterated through millions of ancestors, and none of these ancestors had vitamin K injections, none of these ancestors had vaccines, none of the ancestors had antibiotics, none of the ancestors had ultrasound. And ultimately, the less of these things you do, I believe, the closest you are to your natural selection guarantee, which is that natural selection doesn't do stuff for no reason. Natural selection doesn't do stuff for no reason, and it shapes you for not perfection, but a form of optimization that human engineers and human doctors aren't even capable of, even if they try. That's my philosophy. Rent a protester CEO rejects a $20 million contract to stage anti-Trump protest. Free speech in the US was never intended to serve as a perpetual vehicle for permanent protest. Oh yeah, so they have this guy. Crowds on demand. He operates crowds on demand. You pay him millions of dollars, he's gonna make sure that there are protesters here and there. Man, this is... If you told that to the founding fathers, your First Amendment is now protecting the business of professional complaining and the business of, I need you to be there with a sign to give the impression that there's an uprising. Wow. That's sad. The United Kingdom is making a dramatic move. 16-year-olds are being given the right to vote in all elections in the United Kingdom. The problem when you do this is that you are directing... First, you are giving power to people who do not live the consequences of the power they wield. So they don't have property yet, they're young, they don't have a house, so they don't have skin in the game at maintaining property. In fact, from the perspective of a young person with no property, the system of property is kind of a scam. It's kind of a lord kingdom type of thing where there are people who have this privilege, but I don't have it. And so what it leads to is if you allow children or 16-year-old to vote, you're headed toward more communism. So it's going to be more leftism that you get from this, more sympathy with migrants, because you don't have an evolved brain. As an 18-year-old, you haven't developed the whole sense of conservatism, maintaining your community as it is. You've not developed these conservative values. Sense of progress says same mistrust for vaccines. We've survived and flourished perfectly fine for X thousand years with zero vaccines. Absolutely, I agree. What parents should expect after Supreme Court's ruling on opt-outs from pro-LGBT storybooks. When classes resume in public schools next month, parents across the nation should expect notification from school administrators about any LGBTQ plus inclusive instruction and the right to opt their children out of it for religious reasons. Wow. Maryland parents have won on June 27th in the Supreme Court. Many of them were Christians and Muslims. They complained that their school district forced instruction about LGBT lifestyles on their young children. That is great. That is great. What I hope is that this business, this whole LGBT propaganda for children becomes unviable. I hope that all parents sign these requests. Maybe you're going to get a bunch of leftist places in California that where most parents want the LGBT book. But I think there's going to be a nationwide, at least in the relatively Republican areas and more, there's going to be a return to normal. And the message will be clear to schools. You don't mess with anti-reproductive propaganda. You don't create these constructions around why ultimately you have to fight your sexual organs or you have to fight the sexual binary. Jan Rushdie says, mainstream immunology and vaccinology are not rationalist medicine, but magical medicine. Yeah, I agree that they don't respect the standards that something like a pharmaceutical study would have to respect. They're more in the business of political forcing. You know, the goal of a vaccine company is to get into the official schedule of we're going to recommend this to parents for all children. Now, when they get there, they're making money. That's where the money is. Biden admits that he didn't sign pardons. Emails show staff that did it for him. I made every decision defending the use of the auto pen. He added, we're talking about a whole lot of people. I think it's an interesting case. Will we be able to make the case that the power of pardon is so tied to the president that you cannot have staff or AutoPen write it? It's an interesting question because these mass pardons are extremely damageable to society. Personally, I like the pardon system. I think it's great that the president can say, hey, okay, there's been political persecution. This guy has been totally unfairly prosecuted. Let's free him. Let's make an exception. But the pardon power should be an exception. The problem with Biden and the Democrats is they use this power to just free masses of black people into society, thinking, oh, well, they've all been targeted just for smoking marijuana. But very often, if they had marijuana while it was illegal, it's because they were involved in all sorts of other crimes that we save ourselves from having to live through by imprisoning them for the first crime that we catch them for. Or sometimes it was plea deals and they had other charges, but they plead down to marijuana only. So the problem is you don't know who you're releasing. When you release a million people saying, oh, well, it was just for pot, no. You're probably releasing very dangerous people into society. So we'll see if these pardons can be cancelled. That would be very shocking, because in the end, going back on the streets and picking up people and sending them back in jail, I don't see it happening from a just right expectations perspective. It's just very violative. Doubting Thomas says, Jeff, in a replicator tango, is there an objective way to measure the degree of control RNA has over its replication while DNA is being delegated to perform the replication versus outright subservience? In a replicator tango, as I've made the case in the book, my thought in the book on this is I don't believe there is an asymmetry during the replicator tango. There only begins to be an asymmetry when DNA starts replicating itself. But then it's not over for the replicator tango. This is where your asymmetry can happen. Because as long as you're really reliant on the replicator tango, every generation of DNA has the exact same genes as the generation of RNA. And so it's one and the other. They both benefit from each other. They are in perfect harmony at that moment. What happens is then DNA starts reproducing, replicating. Now you have a tension and now you have an asymmetry. So you have RNA maybe still replicating. DNA is replicating also. And then RNA-DNA is in a replicator tango also. Now you have the tension, and now you have certain life forms in which they will outcompete others by having more DNA time and more DNA replication and more asymmetry toward DNA. They will outcompete the other life forms because of the advantages of DNA. But as long as you're in a true replicator tango without the self-replication moment of the revolutionary phenotype, you don't have differences emerging in the advantage of one molecule or the other. And you cannot speak of a selfishness of either molecule independently. They are equally dependent on the other. Putative Pathogen says, DNA isn't a prescriptive static function. It reacts differently to different circumstances. Oh yeah, he's talking about poisoning with fake food. Absolutely. So we'll be headed toward our private show in 10 minutes from now. Join me by subscribing on the Subscribestar at the $20 level or on the Patreon. I will be putting the link to the private show in 10 minutes from now, and we'll go live. We may discuss whatever is on your mind. So join us by subscribing to the Subscribestar. The link is in the description below. I will see you all in 10 minutes.